上加薪，帮帮帮我解密，哎呀你谁谁看我都觉得你的那么学习慢慢慢在你。
At its core, Insight Myanmar is about connection. We strive to bridge divides and foster understanding by sharing the stories of those living through extraordinary times. Connection fuels empathy, and empathy inspires action. So whether it's through tales of spirituality, reflections on cultural heritage, or accounts of people's struggles against oppression and their aspirations for a better future, we aim to forge connections towards a shared humanity that transcends borders. Let's start to build on that connection with the interview that follows. Nguyen, thank you very much for joining us on this episode of Insight Myanmar podcast.
Thank you for your inviting or part of your podcast too.
Absolutely. So we are speaking in Oslo, Norway, which has been your home for some time. You are the general secretary of the CRPH Support Group Norway, in addition to any number of titles which you also hold. And you have been active in supporting a democratic Myanmar for some time before the coup and after the coup to an extraordinary extent, which we'll get into and get into your overall story. Let's get into the roots and the beginning of your story, because you have been in Oslo away from Myanmar a very long time and have been doing work from here. So tell us about your early family life and when and how and what brought you to Oslo.
Yes, I went here 2008 December as like a family reunion permit. And then I was really simple woman in here from the beginning. And yes, I was living in Yangon before in Norway. Yep. My family in there, but my father is really politic and a student from the 1974 uprising. So
this is Uthant.
Yeah, that is, yes, Uthant or union of university place. So that's why he was in jail, and his life is just fighting for democracy.
Really? So you have grown up in a household from the various earliest stages of being aware of these things, because, you know, we have other guests on who come to a political awakening at some point later in life because of this coup or this issue or this disruption. But it sounds like this you grew up in this kind of environment from the start.
Yeah, our surrounding, our environment is like that. But from the beginning, I think that is really, really exhausted. Hell, the whole life of mine and my family is watching by the military, and we can't do official work. We can't apply any official in Myanmar, something like that. All the time we have watching by someone.
Really?
So that is our life.
So from an early age, that was what you were, from an early age you saw people watching you, watching your family, being prevented from access of certain opportunities?
Yes, that is not for opportunity. Actually, military and that's general, they think mindful as well. We're doing something or doing uprisings or something like that. So they have watchings about his movement. Mm-hmm. At the same time, they are watchings about the family movement too. Yeah, that is my life. And then I think politics and this revolutions all the time and really difficult in my family. That's I think that is so much for me. My father, his name is Uchiwin Bakogu. Every peoples in Myanmar who is involved in uprisings, 77 or Uthan or 88, they know about him. For me, I don't think I will involve in that because that's exhausted for me. Mm-hmm. That is from my life.
What was his role in 1974? What did he do?
He is leader of the student in university.
Uh-huh. So he was the leader of the protest. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, he was. So after the 88 uprising, he is one of the leader who has lead the uprising. So he has so many arranged and so many produced song or something like that.
Yeah, so I mean, this is incredible. So perhaps before getting into your story, because his story is part of your story, and unfortunately he's not here with us today to be able to give this story, can you, for whatever you know about his involvement and the role that he took on, the activities he did, can you describe them for us?
Yes, that's he has uprising in July 7, uprising. So after that, Newin has destroyed all of the union of students or something like that. So he ran out of the country, but not the country, ran out of the city maybe. But he cuts it, and then he has in jail 6 years after that. So after this prison time, he was trying to get advocated, and then he will be lawyer. He was lawyer, and then he is trying all the time to against the Newin and all military. So 88 uprising, he got involved all of this uprising and how he can do. And after that, military trying to catch him, so he ran out from the city and going to the forest and take a moment along from family. So that is the summarize about him.
Yeah. So, you know, it's so interesting because 1974, this was, as if my history is right, this was really the first time since the 1962 takeover by Ne Win that there was a serious challenge to his rule. And this came in the form of U Thant, who was the Secretary General of the United Nations, passing away, and the students wanting some kind of ceremony, funeral, where to place him in an important place with other noted Burmese, that and Ne Win wanted to just push this aside, didn't want to give him this honor. And so, you know, your father was one of the leaders, or the leader, as you're saying, in formulating this protest and this resistance, which then had an effect on 88. And when 88 happened, some of those that took part in 74 were kind of the elders that were turned to for advice and for guidance. So 74 was a really, this protest at Uthant's remains and funeral, this was a really important time in Myanmar history and in the trajectory of the democracy movement. But what's so interesting was that, you know, we say 1988 was closed compared to like 07 or 21.
Yeah.
1974 was a totally different picture altogether. You talk about, you know, people, Myanmar people not having access to outside world, to ideas, to opportunities, to the concept of democracy, to freedom, education, those things, you know, by that point, they were completely closed off. And so with that in mind, I'm wondering, you know, to what degree your father understood democracy. If he had tasted it with the parliamentary democracy after World War II, or if he had learned about it or traveled somewhere. But to what degree did he understand or embody democratic principles in the protest against Ne Win that he was doing? Or to what degree was he just protesting because, you know, everyone was unhappy with Ne Win and he thought, you know, something must be better than this?
Yes, that's, I'm not exactly what was he thinking, but I feel that his leg and his thinking all the time is that the country, Myanmar, is dissolved to be alive like with the democracy. Everybody have need the same rights and some. So I realize what was he thinking, his motive is coming from.
Yeah.
But he's really deeply all of his life in this moment and in this fight. So I was really appreciate his fighting, and then I know that so many people in Myanmar who is fighting for democracy and human rights, and they don't have recognized someone, and they died in the history. They don't get any title or any recognized, but they did what they believed in, right? Mm-hmm. So that is my father too.
Right. But you say when you grew up in that household from a young age, you felt very strongly you don't want to continue this family tradition.
Yes, my father has so many expectations to me.
Really?
Because I don't know exactly why, but he asked to me, trying to learn the language, a different language. And then he gave me a lot of books to learn about political and religious and how is the situation in Myanmar, what is the history from the kingdom or something like that.
Mm.
He read a lot and he recommended to me to read in a book. So I'm living in that life, but I think that is so many to carry in the life and so many distractions to do something in Myanmar. That is difficulties. I see my family difficulties and I see my father's difficulties too. So I don't think I will be in politics in my future.
Yeah. What did you want to do instead?
Just actually, I'm interested in economic.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm going to business administrations in Myanmar. I finished with that bachelor degree.
Mm.
But after that in here, my degree is not recognized in Norwegian's system,
mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm trying again. But I think in that time, if I will do in this business or something like that in Norway, I need language skill.
Mm-hmm.
Business administration must be in professional language skill, mm-hmm. So that's why I'm changing to the accounting and auditions in here. So I finish, I take one more bachelor degree in here with accounting and audition.
What were the circumstances that brought you to Oslo in the first place?
That's my husband is in here. I'm married with him, and then that time I'm in Singapore.
Yeah.
I was working there and studying for master grad, but I think I need to follow to him because of my pregnancy.
Yeah. So your husband was a political refugee
in
Norway.
In Norway.
And you left graduate school in Singapore to come and join him.
Yes.
In Norway, and that's what brought you here. What year was that?
Mm-hmm. That's what 2008 December. Yes.
And you've been here ever since.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, you were looking into business and accounting and economics. That was your interest. You did not want to follow in this impossible journey that your father had sketched out.
Yes.
And yet, I mean, so often are these stories coming that we don't want to follow in our parents' trails, no matter what they happen to be.
Yeah.
And then somehow, you know, so many of us do. And so for you, what was your journey in going towards the study of economics and somehow being drawn back into the sphere?
But I don't want to refuse to my father try or something like that, but I'm really exhausted to involve all of the politics because of my experience in my best life.
Yeah.
But in 2021, February,
yeah,
that's I'm really recognized that night, 1st February of 2021. Actually in here, that's January 31st night, 10 o'clock, that my friends, he asked me, he was chatting to me at Whitmon. I heard about military take their power. That could help them. You have so many contact in Nepiro. Please take a look. Is that correct or not? That is really early stage.
Mm-hmm.
Every people didn't know that happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yes, really, I have so many people contact with in Nepiro and Pimna. I have so many friends there. So I ask them. They have grown like in the chatting place, but they didn't answer. So I said to my friends in Norway, That's not be happen. So about 1 hour, that's really happened.
Mm-hmm.
I got message from others that is really happened. So 11 o'clock, that is a confirmed coup have happened.
Mm-hmm.
I feel lost.
Mm-hmm.
I feel really lost. That's never happened in my feeling that lots before, maybe in the future too. Oh, crying. I don't know why I'm crying, just cry. Or I read all of the news and talking with others, but crying and just that is really happened. That loss is in my heart, deeply feelings. That is begin with my journey.
Yeah, yeah. How do you feel now talking about and remembering that moment?
Really upset.
Yeah.
Why did they do that? Why? Yeah. Don't have answer. I am living in Norway. I feel the democracy and freedom and safety in here and human rights. I don't want to say every people is good enough. Human right, it's human. Human being is human being. Some kinds of being is good and some is not so really. But I'm saved in here. I feel democracy and I got all of the opportunity if I want to. I can try whatever I want.
Mm-hmm.
So from the 2010 to 2021 January, yes, we feel like that Myanmar has also free. Some kinds of difficulties was gone, right? Telegram or communications is free. That is really good opportunity to my children and all of the generations. So that's all hopes is was gone. So that space is really upset and never forget that moment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. And so you've lived this whole life of trying to, coming from this esteemed kind of political activist family and father, and you've set your life up completely different in terms of what you study, where you are, where you're living, what your direction is. And then 2021 comes and it just seems like a magnet to just suck you right back into, you know, that stream that you've been carefully avoiding.
Yep. Yeah. Yes, sure. Because I'm here from the beginning, I'm doing my own business beside of my official job.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to up my own company in here, handling with my own country and Norway. So that is my goal. And I was traveling company, I have it. But in that COVID time, that the traveling company was still because of the pandemic. But after the 21, so I didn't want to do again this company. That's why I'm canceled all of this business.
Right. Did you take a moment to really think about if you were really going to engage in this direction of political activism towards Myanmar and really kind of weigh the intensity of this decision, or was it just an automatic immediate response that you knew what you had to do?
Yes, that is not options in my head.
Really? It was automatic then?
Yeah.
Yeah, even though you had avoided this for so long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From the beginning, I didn't think that that's where we so long. Actually, we will fight back hard and we will win in the one or 2 years. But after the 6 months, I think that's where we a little bit longer.
Yeah. When you think about your journey now of what's, you know, been 5 years or so, we could say, coming up on, and you reflect about how, you know, not only has your involvement, which we'll get into in a moment, changed and supported Myanmar, but I'm sure you have also been transformed in that process. So do you, in what ways have you grown? In what ways have you transformed personally through opening up towards this political activism?
Yeah, that's really difficult because from the beginning, I don't have any experience, don't have background from politics and activists. So, yeah, this is two sides of experience. One is the good and one is the really bad for the woman who don't have any experience in Norway. And I can't say I will be perfect Norwegian language too. So, but I have some kinds of helps. Exactly from my old boss in my job. I'm working at the Buddhist Federations of Norway. So that is the really support to me. This position is, I think, because I have good network in there. And then my boss, my old boss, he is general secretary of the Buddhist Federations. He has also experience about Myanmar. He knows very well about the Myanmar politics and all of the nations or something like that. So he helped me. From the beginning, I recognized that my group, that's 88 old generations group. They have also really frustrating and upset, so they got one chatting group and they are trying to protest about that coup they don't accept or something like that. So they asked me, can you help us about the document applying in Norway? Because they want to demonstration in front of the parliament. So I don't know exactly how can I do for this process, but I do want to. I'm working with my boss from the beginning of the coups and contact with the monk in the country who has difficulties about with that coups and something like that. So they asked me to help the document process. So I asked to my boss, how can I do that? He didn't know too, but he asked to the police stations and how we can apply for this place allowance or something like that. So that's my beginning, my journey beginning. That is demonstrations was happened 6 February in front of the parliament. Thus I was effort to get the place and to get permissions to do this or something like that. But I'm not exactly sure to be lead this demonstration because I think that's this 88 generation in there. They will lead it, right? But just only I'm supporting for everything they need. Yeah, but in that day, they don't have any meeting leader, also conferencier. So they do need someone who will lead this this ceremony or demonstration. So I was there. So that is my first beginning of the job.
That's fascinating. So you say that you were working at the Buddhist Federation of Norway. Tell us about that organization and what they do and how you've then involved them in the Myanmar situation.
Buddhist Federations of Norway is an umbrella organization. Actually, in here, that we call Truth Samfund. That is the religious organization. So they have 15 groups under that umbrella organization. So that is a different kind of Buddhist, different kind of background land. They have Thailand, Vietnam, Tibet, Myanmar, Sri Lanka, Khmer, Chinese, Japanese, or so many. So that I'm just only administrated for their supporting from the government of Norway. So that we do for all organization. They are not involving so much in the Myanmar, but my latest boss, General Secretary of Buddhist Federation, he has a project in Myanmar for the education of the monk who has a great opportunity to get the highest education in the monk education. So he has connected with the highest monk in Myanmar. So that's why he understands about that. Or he knows well about Theravada Buddhism. Or he have a good connection with the highest monk in Myanmar and Thailand also.
Right. And so then as the coup went on, the conflict went on, and looking for ways to give support, in what ways were you able to mobilize networks through the Buddhist Federation of Norway to support Myanmar to a greater extent?
That is one kind of supporting. It's moral supporting. But yes, he has evolved in some kind of demonstration and some kind of speech. And then and one time, he was writing an appeal letter to the embassy of Norway, Myanmar embassy in Norway, and asking about why are you doing like this and why did you abuse to the monk in Myanmar? That appeal is writing to the general Myanmar and via the Myanmar embassy, Norway.
And so as you went on, I believe you were able to work with the foundation to also do events or raise funds or raise awareness. Is that right?
Yeah. So let me explain about how we can start with this organization. We have a demonstration. 6th of February 2021. After that, we think about that we need to do all together from Norway. So that's why we are trying to collect all of the organizations and taking a one-on-one unity group. So that's why we talk with the others organization. From the beginning, that's Mao Mao Mien, who is the representative in NUG now. He has been working with, he had working with us. After the demonstration, he is involved in our group. So he is the one of our leader because of they need someone who has experience. So that's we work together and we collect all of the group organizations in Norway and discuss about what we will do or why we will do harm. So we have decided one Parabri organization will pick up in here. So that's why we register in here. Actually, that is basically we needed that one bank account who can drive in for fundraising, right? that we need one organization who can move all of this process. That's why we have a register in Norway. So we have found this EAPA support group Norway at March 2021, but registrations has been done at November 2021. But our fundraising and collecting money was happen at March, from the first month of second month of groups.
And you've been very active with fundraising since then. I don't know if you feel comfortable sharing your fundraising marks that you've reached each year, but I think that's quite impressive.
From the beginning, we have collected money from our society. It's just only our Pami society. Some of the Norwegian sympathy or Norwegian community was involved, but that is not so much. But in that time, media was so active. All the time, Myanmar news in the news, people and TV or all media have that. But I don't have any experience how I can spread out about our organization. We don't have any experience too, but we try as much as we can. I think my experience or my professional life is accounting and audit. So I do know mostly all of the law in Norway, how I can transfer money
That's important.
Officially, how can I manage my accounting to show to the government and how I can do officially, that is my good point of my skill. So that's I do all the way long. Another my skill is IT. I'm a good in computer and all of the technique. Because of I was 18, I was programmer. So I have experience too. So that is really effect in this way too.
Yeah. You were sharing with me before that you that you've been able to fundraise annually somewhere in the range of about $300,000 US dollars. And you know, that's so impressive, not just in terms of the amount that you're doing on basically an individual level or small organization, but also that I've now visited and been with diaspora groups around the world, and I tend to find they operate in largely the same way. Whether you're in, you know, Sydney or San Francisco or Stockholm, then you generally see the same types of, you know, lucky draws and
And a raffle ticket.
A
raffle ticket they have also too.
Or food fairs or you know, these kinds of things. And they're on one level, they're inspiring because they're, you know, the diaspora is largely supporting the revolution going on. But there's also something a bit sad about them because they're often within the community. There's very few people from outside the community who comes, which basically means that they're putting on a food fair for each other, or they're making and selling handicrafts for each other to then buy. So, you know, it's just kind of an excuse to be able to support and to give when, you know, it's not coming from any outside source. So, you know, you might as well just be donating directly, and the diaspora group has already given so much. And so what you have done is unique and impressive, not only for the amounts that you've raised, but also the individuals that you've targeted that have been outside this usual diaspora community, as well as the partnerships and the ways that you've done that. I think that's quite unique for what I've seen in other other abroad efforts in doing that. So can you explain a bit of your strategy as well as what you've done? And, you know, maybe some diaspora groups listening might get some ideas of how to expand beyond their normal networks and communities.
Actually, I want to share with that. So I do all the time in Myanmar groups too, because our peoples from Myanmar in all of the diaspora spread the world. They have doing into the own group. They are funding in the own group. That is a limited amount.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I said to them, this journey will be long than what we expected for, right? Oh. So we need to find out which target we will go through.
Mm.
So where we living, that target is the big targeting.
Yeah.
But we need to do awareness about Myanmar. So they don't know about Myanmar. Actually, in Norway, 6 million of people, 60 million of people in Norway, no, 6 million of people in Norway, they don't know Myanmar. Maybe 20% is the most they know about Myanmar. 80% they didn't know about Myanmar. They have money, they want to help, but they don't know who else they will help. Right, so we need to uprise about Myanmar news, mm-hmm. and we need to give some information.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, we need sharing our helping process, so like officially and out of the open message, and not be hiding away from them. What they do, what we are doing, and what we need for. Or how we are transferring this officially and something like that. So that is a really difficult situation in Myanmar because we need weapon, you know. I can't support weapon from here in officially channel. So that's we trying to a little bit creative thing. So how we can support that. So that's why I'm supporting all of our resources in officially. Go through to the humanitarian help. For example, armed force, they need food, right? They need a weapon. At the same time, they need food to live there. So that's how I'm trying to support in that way. So officially, I'm showing in here well I'm supporting and how I'm supporting and what they need. So that's I have a channel to showing all of this this amount and how I am flow this current to the Myanmar. So I have a website and Facebook, and then all channel I'm trying to reach out, explaining mostly open all of the data. That's I try, and then awareness. So we need activities. Our community in Norway, there's only 4,200 Burmese people in Norway. That is living in Norway and out of the state, spread out the country. So we can't mobilize in one place. So that's why I'm going out of the place they was living. So, for example, in Oslo, I have activities in this month. After the 2 months, I'm going to the Lillehammer. It's mid in Norway. I have activities there too. So that is we have communicate with the local people, local Norwegian people, and showing our culture, dancing, and showing what happened in Myanmar, and we take some video and some demonstrations and some all kinds of awareness about Myanmar.
Mm-hmm.
So that's I have in Froland, and that's at Rogaland, far away from Oslo. We have the big activities there too. So that is my mobilized strategy.
Yeah, so I find this so remarkable because, you know, you're to get that fundraising support, you're realizing that the messaging has to come first.
Mm-hmm.
Well, two things have to happen, the messaging and the outreach. Those are two different activities. You have to figure out how and where and what form you're going to do the outreach. And then you have to have the messaging, which carries the content of the outreach.
Yes.
And so these are two separate strategies you have to have. And certainly if we look at the outside in, we can be very critical of the reasons why there hasn't been more engagement. But I also think it's fair to look at the inside out and to be critical of and to look, you know, honestly and critically at why the inside out messaging and storytelling and outreach, why it's been so dismal. I don't think it'd be a big stretch to say failure in many parts. And I'm highlighting all this because what you are doing here is different than anywhere else in the world I've seen or heard about in terms of doing events that are not just by diaspora for diaspora with maybe a backpacker who spent time in Myanmar, or a spouse of a Burmese person, or someone who just wanders by and wants to see more, or someone who really cares about human rights, the random person. I'll never forget what one of our podcast guests said years ago. One of the main fundraisers in Los Angeles for the NUG, Nandar Minsway, and she made the comment that it was just heartbreaking to hear that, you know, when we do an event, if we have one white person show up, we get so happy and we feel like it's such a success. Mm-hmm. And that just to highlight like how much these are diaspora events, and and I've spoken to other organizers who just either they want to, but they don't know how, or they're so burdened with other things that they're not even really thinking of how to do that. They're just kind of used to doing same old, same old. I've spoken to other people who feel that other Burmese members of the diaspora have expressed concern that because Myanmar has been closed to the extent that it has, that there are not more innovative ways of thinking that activists in other countries have found. And again, this is all background to set up that you have done things a very different way. You have done outreach to, you have done innovative forms of outreach so that more than one white person is coming to the events that you're doing. And you're, as you say, you know, Norwegian people want to give for worthy causes. They want to care about this, but we have to figure out how to first reach out to them. And then what are we saying?
Yeah.
What is our message? Those are two very critical steps.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly. Mm. That's how I try. But stay difficult for me, but that is really difficult ways in that all along, but I do better than a little bit other, because of from the beginning they said we can't reach out all of the information to the peoples in Norway or peoples in the world about Myanmar. So we do need shouting out loudly and effectively. So I think why that's never impossible in the life, we will have a way. So how we can do that? So I don't think so much more about the world. I can't do for all of the world. My friend said you can change the world, but I do truly believe in myself. I can do change for my land, and then I'm where I live in from. In Norway, I know about the Norway. How can I do this process? So from the beginning, that is difficult, but now it's better than better. At the same time, I think Norwegians and Myanmar diaspora in Norway, they have also high level of understanding. So Myanmar diaspora, all the time they have a conflict in town, and then they don't agree each other. So that is difficult to support each other. Mm-hmm. So divorce is beginning from inclusion. So that is not good for our community. In here, I have collect all of the 21 organization from the beginning. After that, now it's 18 organizations still on our umbrella organization.
These are Burmese diaspora organizations?
Yes.
So you started with 21 Burmese diaspora organizations and you've retained 18. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Actually, the rest of the organizations, they don't want to involve, and someone is out of the organization registration because of own difficulties. That's why that is to the 18 organization now. That's have some of religious organizations and ethnic organizations. Yeah. So they have already official registration and someone is not. Mm. But they are really inclusive in there, or stand together, working together. So that's why that's a success in in this journey.
So that's one marker of success, is that you've been able to have a unified message even within those differences of opinion. And that's really important. You know, we've had Mike Hack on the podcast several times. He does a lot of lobbying for the NUG and for the mm-hmm. Burmese in Washington, D.C. And so he's someone who's been very involved for many years with how lobbying efforts take place. And one of his biggest criticisms and concerns has been that some of the ethnic and religious organizations have been so strong in their lobbying efforts that are also preferencing their own group, mm-hmm. that sometimes it leads to disparate messages, and where he thinks that coming together more would be more effective in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, yes. If we can do like that, that's where we... effective-wise, where are we coming out, right? Mm. But that is difficult for us to in out or inside Myanmar too. So that's in Norway, that is not difficult for us. We have just one group. Out of group will be one group we are doing together. So for that, we do need using the democracy. Mm. Out of the way, I'm spread out that information, what we will do. Where we will donate, mm-hmm. what do you want to donate, where do you want to donate, you can suggest that. If you will effort in these activities, you can suggest that. Mm-hmm. So your suggestions is our donation. Mm-hmm. So that's why communication is effective. Mm-hmm. So one example, we have a big activities for the Aung San Suu Kyi by day. We have a food marketing, food bazaar. So we get some amount of money. Mm-hmm. So I have so many meeting with them who has involved in there, who has a give effort in there. Also, I ask to them directly after the festival. So where do you want to donate?
Yeah.
Because every people have own people in our country, mm-hmm. own relations in our country. They do need to donate directly, mm-hmm. right? They have own interest. Mm-hmm. Yes, we need to understand for that. But not the decisions from the top level. That's only come from the ground level mm-hmm. who is working for. That's really need to use this strategy. Because we don't have any people who is helping to build up that celebration, what we can do? As like that one people coming up, what we can show it for? So we do need this solidarity and their motivation. That's why I will give them what we want to do for donation and what we want to do. This celebration will be perfect. Every suggestions we collect it and respect it.
Yeah. So this is a great example of, you know, many things, bottom up democracy decision makings. It's hard for any group to come together, and especially when money is involved.
Yes,
and to make those decisions. So it's a great example of that, and also for, you know, interethnic harmony mm-hmm. That you've been able to do. But the second part of this is, I mean, that's only one part, because the second part, as we've mentioned, is also building that bridge beyond the Burmese community to just, you know, keep feeding itself, to have some support coming from outside that. And so, how have you managed that part of it?
To support it the outside of the... So, as like my example, from that money coming from this festival, mm-hmm. so I ask to them, well, do you want to donate? So, some kinds of people have connection with the community in Myanmar. So, they ask, for example, Chin group, they mm-hmm. need supplies, medical supply, maybe some kinds of other supplies, they ask to me. So, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, we count it, how many we have, or how many we have this budget. Mm-hmm. And since, so management from me, well, will be coming how much we will donate to where, like mm-hmm. that. Because I have so many contact from the ground level, so mm-hmm. I can hear which group is really doing work, or which group is really needs this resource mm. or not. I'm here from the ground. Mm. But that's donations true to the main request person. So I ask to them, well, do you want to who threw this money to where? Give me this rest, or give me this contact. So I will contact directly, asking them how can I transfer that, or where they will be using, or which response I need. Because all the time I'm transfer money from the Norwegian bank, we need to show all of the receipt where we were using for, right? So that's I make sure this process from the source of the source of the place who have received this money. So that's make sure for that connections. After that, I transfer that.
Right. But I'm also asking to fundraise the money. You've gone mm-hmm. outside of Burmese communities, which is also rare that I've seen in mm-hmm. diaspora. And so how have you been so effective in being able to deliver that message about Myanmar to Norwegians, to non-Burmese Norwegians, and to be able to get their support in return?
There, yes, that is. I have a website, and so I'm a lot of messages coming up from the Facebook and website, and so showing all of the message where we have a donation. So how which difficulties will come? Some groups from the ground, they can't showing out to the public. So I write down all of the, honestly, we have this supporting information. If you want to see, come and ask to me directly, I can show you. But that is really difficult to show out to the public city because of the security reason. So that message is clear. And if you want to see my receive and something like that, so I can show personally. That is one of the reasons. Another is I got some video or some photo or of donations history. For example, IDB camp, that is really easy to get some photo on how we are doing this or mm-hmm. video, something like that. That's showing in the public.
Yeah. How have you been able to engage a foreign audience, a non-Burmese audience? How have you been able to make them care and to bring them into fundraisers?
Yes, I'm trying to out of the media resource. Yeah, that's I can say. Because Facebook is the main resource, and another is my contact with the newspaper, a TV program or something like that. But that is really a week in Norway because they don't have time to look at our activities and our movement mm-hmm. because they have busy with others' country problems in here. But I never give up to reach out them.
Mm-hmm. Right. And when you have physical events, you also are, you have many non-Burmese, many local Norwegians who attend those events, which, mm-hmm. you know, going back to the quote I said a few minutes ago, where that's not so much the case, how have you been able to bring to reach and encourage members outside the diaspora to also come to those physical events and be a part of that?
Yeah, that's my network. It's really important in that occasions because I am the boat leader of the Surum Mardi Gras organizations. I have been there 2012 mm-hmm. in to now, so local peoples know me. That's the one kinds of network. Mm-hmm. Another is I am the boat members of the Norsk Asiatisk organizations. They have over 10 lands and members in there. Mm-hmm. Also, we have a big event too. So that I have reached out all of outland France. Consider that is not Norwegian, but that is all those people who is coming to Norway and living in regions out about Myanmar. So they were interesting about that, or they spread out to Norwegian peoples. That is the one of the resource. And another one is I am the representative of Inclusions Committee at Lillestrøm municipality.
Mm-hmm.
That was 1 year ago. I got a message from the municipality and invite me to apply that position. So that's why I have a network in the municipality too. So I can't break out of the municipality network too. That is outreach to the Norwegian people most.
Mm. So it sounds like you, through your involvement in your already established involvement in a handful of other Norwegian-based organizations that have nothing to do with Myanmar, through your interaction with these, you have inserted Myanmar into those networks and activities and events, and that's allowed some
will be involved in that, yeah.
Right, which then gives you access to funds and to awareness, to attention,
yeah.
Many of those things as well.
Yes. Yeah. Sure.
I think that's key there, because I think that some of the other diaspora that I've spoken to, they've expressed an uncertainty in sharing publicly kind of what they're going through and what's happening. They don't know how to, they don't know where to, even if they have some kind of connections, they have very, like, as they one person described it to me, as kind of like an in-house face and an out-of-house face, and there's like a firewall between them.
Yes.
But this is where it sounds like you've done things very differently.
Yeah. That's, I think, one of my friends from my childhood, he said to me, don't live it in the shell. Go out from the shell.
Mm-hmm.
So doing whatever you want to, don't afraid. That's my strategy. Not to be afraid to do right thing. So go... I'm not good enough language skill. I'm not good enough to my political activist experience, but I have motivated myself, and I have a good, how can I say, that is the big powerful to do change in Myanmar, right? I do need money to support every people who are suffering in Myanmar.
Mm.
That's I'm trying to find a way what I can do. So that's why in that event they invited me. I go there and I reach out there, and whatever I can, I say it out aloud about Myanmar. So that's not what is big and big after that.
Mm. So you say whatever event you can go to, whatever audience you have access to, you go and you speak about Myanmar.
Yes.
So my next question is, what do you say? Because there are many different ways to introduce and talk about this conflict. And Myanmar is so complicated. And to a novice, I mean, even I've spoken to diplomats or aid workers or others that are kind of coming on the Myanmar scene, and they just describe, you know, their first year of trying to get us, like, what book do I read and who do I talk to? And I mean, many have said that they've turned to our podcast as a kind of educational tool. So, you know, when you're talking about going to a crowd of Norwegians who have little to no experience or knowledge of Myanmar, and you have, you know, maybe 20 minutes or an hour or whatever it is to be able to tell a story, how do you figure out what to say and how to say it?
Yeah, that's my simple strategy or my simple knowledge. We do need to support human rights, and we do need to support people who is suffering in somehow. So political will be difficult to understand, complicated. Yes, my Myanmar people in our land is really difficult to understand all of these situations if you are beginner about Myanmar. Yes, but I don't want to explain all of that. Just only I need to explain it. We have faced the crisis by our own people who had made this happen. That military is abused to their own people, mm-hmm. in land.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Civil, I don't want to complain about fighting each other with the you have a weapon, you can fight each other. That's where we have the damage. We do need to care or not. That is your decision. But civilians don't have any weapon. They don't have tension to fight the military or move the others revolution or two. So we do need to support them. Why we don't want to do that? That is a simple question. And I give only a lot of information what happened in Myanmar and why that's happened and what is the cause. Also, some people asked to me from the beginning in Norway, that's why are you silenced that Rohingya case was happened? Why don't you active for defense for the Rohingya people's has crisis? So I did, but I don't have power to have a voice out loudly. That's, I don't accept that must be or should be happened. But then all of the civilians in Myanmar, they don't aware of this too. But now they have also same crisis. Why don't you support that, right? Why don't you help this crisis? Some people said that is only a local conflict. That is only their own business. That is not for international countries in, have involved in there or something like that. Why? That is not the right way in Myanmar. Most of the people said that is not good. We don't accept it. So we must care for that. That's simple. So I do, I give this explanations and I give a simple explaining about Myanmar.
And how do you find that people usually respond to when you speak to them? What you've given one example of, which is a very common example, is, well, what about the Rohingya crisis? That's that's one common refrain. But apart from that, what kind of response, what resonates with the crowds when you talk to them?
That's most of the reaction is yes, that is the really need to help them or somebody and good reactions. And then the last time I have reached out to the community of Lillestrøm, something about saying what happened in Myanmar at the same time, that's a natural disaster too. So many kinds of disaster in Myanmar, you know, flood and earthquake and so many kind of that difficulties in there. At the same time, bombing from the military to the civilian. So I showed to them and they said that, oh, so really sad for how they will survive in there or that somebody comes out. Yeah. And they give me some suggestions how I can reach out more than that, or how can I do. Also, that suggestions and opinion is really valuable for me.
So for those diaspora who are listening to this and who are wanting to extend their reach and their fundraising capabilities, what advice would you give them?
Okay, yes, that's they give me at which kind of network in Norway use the most, so I can use that too. So that is the one kind of suggestion. It's very good for me. For example, SPICE in here, they have a network or all of the fundraising events and all of that humanitarian help project, they can extend in there, register in there, because they were rising out all of the Norwegians' place. And most of the Norwegians use that network. So that is good advice to me. I don't know before, but now I know that. And then another is I can reach out your message to our own community network. That is good for me too. So I give them all of information they need, and they will spread out in their own network. That is also good for me. And I don't know exactly about the government sites, but from the Norwegian community, they would like to help me. But at the same time, that is the competitions all of that, all the time. that I mean, computation is a little bit strange words, but that's crisis computations in here, right? Gaza, Iran, Syria, Ukraine, all the computations is happen in our local communities too.
Right. So, you know, picking apart from some of the ideas you gave and some of the activities you've done, you know, you've tried to lobby to influence government policy and to meet members of government, members of parliament, to be able to brief them on Myanmar. You've developed partnerships with local media to be able to bring them stories and make sure it gets covered. You've been able to tap into local networks, local in this case, not meaning Burmese, but meaning Norwegian networks that would be sympathetic to understanding the Burmese message, to understanding the message pertaining to, you know, the situation as it's going on in Burma. And you've been not shy in being able to get into those networks and use them and ask for time, and then in that time to ask for attention, and within that attention to then ask for funds, and to bring people in that way. And so I think these are all lessons that can be applied in any community. Again, from Sydney to San Francisco to Stockholm, these are especially for those that have lived there for some time. You know, that lived there for decades, even who've lived there just for a couple of years. There are ways to think innovatively outside of the box. I mean, I've even when I've been asked this question, I've said I've talked about how much of an opportunity there really is for outreach and explanation beyond local communities. Like, for example, in America, where I'm from, I don't know if this is the case everywhere, but certainly it's the case in America. There are three places where that I know of that are three different institutions that you can find in every town, in every city, and you could walk into those institutions and tell them you have a presentation you'd like to give, and you will find someone very happy who is able to accommodate and set you up. One of those institutions are public libraries.
Yeah.
Public libraries are always looking for events. They're always looking for content.
Yes.
And if you can go to, you know, tour public libraries and just say you want to give a certain Burma event, and they will bring, you know, anywhere from, they'll send it out and post it and bring anywhere from 10 to 30 people that will show up.
Yeah.
A second is public schools.
Yes.
Again, same thing. There are, you go to a school and you say that you want to talk about Myanmar, they will find a sixth grade social studies teacher or someone who's like, oh, I would love to have to come in and share what's happening. And then you get into the minds of a couple of kids.
Yeah.
They want to do projects. They remember it for a couple of years. And the third is universities. Where there's clubs, you know, not just classes. There's certainly classes. There are clubs. There are presentations. There are other venues for being able to share this information. And all of these ways kind of build up, you know. And it's not so much about the quantity of those you reach, that's part of it, but it's also quality.
Yeah.
You know, there was, I had a situation where I was passing through Montana, and which is a very sparsely populated state, and had, through my own networks, had arranged to give a presentation in a church about Myanmar. And as they announced it, they sent flyers everywhere and, you know, went to show up in the room where it was. Aside from my friends and the organizers, there were four people that showed up, just four people.
Yeah.
And, but I thought, okay, this is what I've been charged to do. And so I'll do it. So I gave the whole presentation. And then one of those four people came up to me afterwards, and she was like the chairperson of this like 10 state church network that had their own branches of those churches everywhere, saying this is something that really more people in our network should know about, and if you could go here or go there or talk to this congregation. And so so never discount that. And when I've given presentations in libraries, it is so interesting the kinds of people that show up. Someone that lived in Myanmar for a year, someone that traveled you know, 30 years ago, someone that had a Burmese friend, someone that just cares about human rights, someone that read a Burmese book. And you know, they're in this small town and they're like, wow, I get to go and hear someone talk about Myanmar for an hour. That's kind of fun.
Yeah.
I'd like to do that. And so there are all these opportunities that you have to get yourself out there. You have to think outside of the box. You have to think about the message you're saying. Mm-hmm. The message you're saying is so important. Are you, what is your hook? What are you delivering that is going to bring people in and make them care? Because guilt trips don't work. Victimization doesn't work.
Yeah.
They're doing airstrikes every day. That only goes so far. So what is the hook of the story you're going to say that's going to bring people in and make them care?
Yeah, that's exactly that you said. This is all of my experience. Mm. I'm one you said about that I'm recognizing all the events what I'm going through. Mm. Because I was invited from the library. A local library, and then one of the libraries so far away from the my native town, also university. Mm-hmm. Some kinds of universities invite me about saying about Myanmar or something like that. And then I asked to my people, own people in Myanmar background, and all of the students in here, if you have a suggestion, some kinds of place I can display about Myanmar, please contact us. Or was one of our people who can show up or saying about Myanmar, delivering about Myanmar is always open for that. So I have a university arrangement and a library arrangement, and then
There you go.
Yeah, that's all of I did all, but as like you say, we do need to prepare which message we will spread.
Yes. Out. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and showed up some people who was living in Myanmar 17 years, and one of the old ambassador or something like that, they have an interesting about
to come out of the woodwork.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that is really a motivation to each other.
Mm.
For me also, sometimes I was depressed, I will do so much.
Right.
Is that effective or not?
Yeah.
But right? But I see that's kind of people. Okay, we have some.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, sometimes I get into low points working on the podcast or the social media. We're putting so much work into this. And then sometimes just thinking, is anyone listening to this? Is anyone? I know the numbers, but still, you know, it's just
just confused.
It's like, you know, are they, is it having any impact? Where's it going? And then, you know, you have those dark moments, but then you hear from, in my case, you know, hear from people about how much these stories are resonating and what change it's making and feel better with that. But when I do connect and when I do share something, that's a motivating factor. You know, it gets, whatever the numbers, it just, it feels good to, and I find that the situation in Myanmar is so shocking and deplorable, but also just so compelling and so inspiring in some ways, and has such geopolitical importance that if it's framed in the right way, there's no way that people will not come around to it. And I have spoken to, in America, I have spoken to far right conservative pro-Trumpers, and I have spoken to, you know, progressive hippies, peace lovers, and there is a way to talk to both groups that is very authentic and brings them in, and how much they're concerned. You know, the human rights people, it's obvious, but there is one anecdote I've shared where I was with a friend in the U.S. who walking down the street, we happened to go into a gun shop. They wanted to see the gun shop. It's not something that that I have a background in. But as we were in the shop, the friend was Burmese, and we, you know, conversation started going, and they asked about what was going on in Myanmar, and I described it, and I suddenly realized, and they were so, the people in the gun shop, they were so compassionate and so moved and horrified by what was happening. And from their point of view, you know, they're looking at, well, here's an oppressive government and a people who don't have access to defend themselves, you know, with weapons like we have here. And there's no one coming to their aid. And so even from like a Second Amendment point of view in America, the right to bear arms, that's where they were hooked on the story. And I've spoken to other gun enthusiasts who have come around the same way and are interested in what does it mean for an oppressed population that doesn't have the right to access weapons, so a tyrannical oppressive force can subjugate them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this is the angle you come in on. This is what I've often described as, like, you know, when, and this is true of the podcast episodes we do and also the outreach that I try to do personally. If I'm going to a group of meditators, I'm not going to give a talk on the power of hip hop. That's not going to resonate.
Uh-huh.
Or if I'm going to meet, you know, if I'm going into the gun shop, I'm not going to, you know, stress the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Mm. Like, that's not really going to matter as much in the gun shop. If I go to human rights defenders, I'm not going to talk about the Second Amendment and the right to bear arms. And, you know, so it's working those messages. But there's so much that's contained in this Myanmar story that whichever group you're talking to, there's a thread of message you could talk to them that's going to make them really care. You talk about the power of hip hop to people that are aspiring hip hop artists and hip hop lovers. You talk about engaged Buddhism to the meditators. You talk about gender equality and LGBT rights to those who care about marginalized communities, and on and on and on.
Yeah, sure. That's we need to learn about where will we go or which targets we will talk about too. So that's, we need to do that. But I'm really impressed your podcast, because we do need that. Because every people's daily life, we driving and going somewhere, or we have all the time with earphone or hearing music or something, a podcast from the car, you know. That is really good message for that. I really appreciate your efforts too.
Yeah, thank you. I find that one of the challenges in this outreach, and when I see other groups that are less successful in the outreach efforts, the one of the problems that I typically see, and I wonder what you think of this and how you've tried to adapt this, is that victimization messages, they just only go so far. And pity doesn't work. Pity does not benefit the giver or the receiver. It's not a good relationship. And victimization is not a story that sells. It might have limited impact in terms of, you know, in some cases kind of coming in. But I see in the storytelling that I've seen, and this is sometimes from activist communities, from diaspora communities, from media, sometimes I feel that it's leaning too much on the victimization angle, which, of course, terrible things are going on in Myanmar. No one disputes that. But what is your storytelling method for trying to bring people into it and hook them? And if your storytelling method is one of victimization and, oh, how terrible this is, and guilt tripping, I just don't know how far you'll get. So have you seen this type of messaging being overused? And if so, how have you innovated that?
And that's, I'm just like simple, I'm thinking out. First, where will we go, or what I want to say to them? So what I need from them.
Mm.
Yeah, that's just really
that's great.
Important.
Yes, yes.
So I must know what I need from this audience in that time.
Yeah.
I do find what I will show up to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's my strategies from the beginning to now. All the time, there will be different participant, different audience, and different interest group. But I'm trying to understand them first.
Yeah.
And then after that, I'm follow up to show up what I want to show to them. And then I take observe about them, what they want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
So after that, I'm doing this preparation to show up, and I take advantage what I need from that. So that advantage is not for bad things. That is good for our peoples, and that I need to support to our people. So we can say that is the really strategy, like economy things. Well, you will be finding the market place.
The market for attention, right?
Yes, that's it. That is the market for attention.
Yeah.
Market for doing right things. So.
Yeah. And the market for attention is not one victimization story after another.
Nope.
That just doesn't sell.
That is not for people who want to hear about that.
It's exhausting.
Yeah.
It's exhausting to keep telling. It's exhausting to keep hearing.
Yeah. At the same time, I think now the world is chaos.
Yeah.
So all the time, people is hearing about that's bad things. How many people dying in the world? How many people have cried? So that's why I'm trying to a little entertaining in a process in there. I want to show about Myanmar. Yeah. They have so many bad things, right? Every scenario is really awful,
mm-hmm.
but from the beginning, I give them some kinds of a happiness and some kind of cultural experience, and that's why they have good interest, and then I get attention from them. After that, I give which message I want to give them.
Right, that's really important, because another problem with victimization is that it strips people of their humanity and their agency. And it just reduces them to a victim, and to a victim who just needs the one-way support of someone else, which again isn't good for anyone. And and instead, to speak, when you're speaking with some cultural tidbit or some happiness, you're not depriving the people of their humanity and of that agency. And I think also you describe the world being chaos, and people don't want to hear more bad things. But where I come into this with is that Myanmar is really the front lines of that chaos happening in the world today.
Yeah, but they don't want to.
But Myanmar has so much to teach us. That's what I mean. I mean, whether you're looking at the backsliding of democracy or the asymmetrical power structures of resisting authoritarianism, or the role that that art and solidarity plays in certain movements. I mean, there's, there's a lot of bad things that are happening, but there's so much experience in institutional history in Myanmar of what they've done to fight this great power that we have to learn from. And so there's another way to tell this story that's not, again, not about the victimization of everything going bad, but about which is true and that needs to be said, but it's just how and when you say it. But you can also lead with, like, you know, the trends of what are happening around the world. This is what they're dealing with now, and they've been dealing with it for some time. And we can learn from, we can get inspired from it. We can learn from how seriously they're trying to,
fight back for that crisis, right? That's really good you mentioned that, because I'm here from one kind of a foreigner, saying about our revolution is the light of creation and how inspiration, that is really important in this journey, because that's how we are stay standing to the 5 years.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that has to be told.
Yeah. If we have a historic in 88 or before, they have a town in the short period. And after that, all of the students was refugee or going to the third country, and then history is done, right? In now, they have fight. And they have creative way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, as like one of the activists, what we can do, they are doing and finding the way to do something effective. And then actor also, that what we can do is finding the way to spread out that information at the same time how we can fundraising. So that's all of the people have own creator, own motivator, and then inspiration each other. So that's why we can do this moment, and maybe we can win in the future, not so far away.
I think the other important thing that you said a little earlier was that you come into audiences with a clear point at the end as to what you're asking of them. And I think that's another kind of simple messaging that's been missing sometimes. I'm recalling, I spoke to Zansi, who's a Burmese performance artist in Berlin, and she referenced how she's gained a lot of inspiration among her Filipino expat artist friends who are activists. And I asked her what inspiration, and she said, well, it's really interesting because these Filipinos, there are three major problems they identify in the Philippines they want to fix. And when you ask them what they're fighting for and what they want to change, they say this and this and this, and we want to do this with problem one, this with problem two, and this with problem three. And it's very clear. And she said, when you talk to us Burmese about what our problem is and what we want to do about it, we talk for aimlessly for hours and then don't end up with any point whatsoever. Yes. And how are we expecting people to come and support us when we're not even giving them a qualified message of exactly what it is we need to support?
Yeah, that is also really important. What we want to get from the target areas, so what we need to give exactly and clearly message to them, because they will... easy to confuse, if you give so much information, mm-hmm. they have out of it that's yeah. interesting and yeah. then confusing yeah. and after that cast away. So that's, yeah. we need to give a real clear message and mm-hmm. what we want to ask for.
And that's also why knowing your audience is so important. If I'm going to a church, if I'm meeting meditators, if I'm meeting human rights defenders, if I'm going to talk to local journalists, if I'm talking to a women's liberation group, a gun shop, you know, all of these different examples, that's why it's so important to kind of, to, if you know Myanmar and you know where these situations fall in, mm-hmm. to be able to describe, oh, well, you care about this issue. Let me tell you about the background of what's happening there. And then you're hooking people not by the tragedy of what's happening to Myanmar, but by the particular issue they care about so much. And want to, and are like, oh, I've cared about that issue all my life. I never knew that was an issue going on in Myanmar. Now, mm-hmm. let me learn more about it. And yes. then that becomes a doorway they walk through.
Yeah.
And then as they
yeah.
walk through that doorway, they're like, oh, well, to understand this, I also have to understand this and this and this. And then hopefully
that's why we're confused, right? Yeah. 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 Right. That is really important. But, yeah, maybe we do need to learn all of the kind of strategy, or maybe we do need more experience, but they will learn about that after this or that. Yeah.
Well, it's just by being innovative. It's just by trying new things. And there are people who are doing it. I mean, I really respect what you're doing. I've said several times, I think like the storytelling that A New Burma is doing, or Kite Tales, I think these are also very innovative ways. And mm-hmm. these have reached very different audiences. They've taken central themes about Myanmar, but they presented them in a very non-conventional way, which has engaged the censors and the backgrounds of people in ways that just a simple news article or a victimization story, you know, yeah. isn't doing as well.
But I think in that our community about this this revolutions as like fundraising or something like that, but that have a limited resource and limited time resource too. For me, mm-hmm. I want to do more than that, but I have a own job. Yeah. I want to live in my own yeah. family also, but we have just doing like the voluntarily.
Yeah.
If we take some advantage from dance, that's where we're coming up with others issue mm-hmm. in our revolution. So that's why we will keep in that volunteer capacity,
mm-hmm.
we can say that. If we want to do more, we need more time and mm-hmm. we need more resource, right? But we can use all of that resource because of time limitation. So that is the also challenge for me. I do think that other people from the other country, they have a problem like me.
Mm, that's right. That's right. Yeah, for sure. Now, another activity you've been involved with is trying to lobby and influence government policy. And mm-hmm. through that, you've, you know, in the short time relatively since the coup happened, having not been involved before, you've been able to make all kinds of contacts in the Norwegian government and also to deeply examine Norwegian foreign policy, past and present. And so can you talk a bit about your lobbying efforts and your evaluation of the way that Norway has engaged?
Yes, from the beginning, that I'm really appreciate and always thanks to the Audun, who is from the Norwegian's Burmese committee. So from the beginning, I don't know exactly who I can contact mm. from the beginning of the demonstration. Mm-hmm. I would like to demonstration before in front of the parliament, mm-hmm. but I don't know who is the
mm-hmm.
who is the
right
interesting about that or something like that. So I asked Audun. I don't know, I didn't know Audun for, but I guess contact in my Facebook. So that's why I asked directly him, and he find out who is the politicians who has interested in Myanmar and who is the activists and then pastime in Aung San Suu Kyi time and the same time.
Yeah.
So that's I got a message from him.
Mm.
So that's why I'm in contact with the Ola Elvestuen from the beginning.
Yeah, who is a member of parliament.
Member yeah. of parliament, and then who is the leader of the Myanmar desk in parliament.
Uh-huh.
So yeah. Ola Elvestuen and NBC was it was closed connect from the beginning of the fencing government. So I got a message from them, or I contact them and directly ask to involve with us or something like that. That's my people ask to me, how dare you do that? You don't know a parliament or political or something. I think they are human, or they are all they are only human. Why I don't want to ask you? I do need help of them. So I asked directly and send a message and asking to do with that or that. So I'm asking directly to the minister, to in Norwegian minister, Norwegian church aid, and all of the network who was involving in the Myanmar case. So that is from the beginning. So after that, I working with the NUG and then CIBH from Myanmar side. So they ask to me, which kind of connections with the Norwegian government, or they do need to talk in each other or something like that. Also, I asked to the Ola Elvis Stewart, or how he can help me or something like that. Mm-hmm. Or Christian Stoker from the NBC leader. So he was helping a lot to me, which kind of networks you can go through. Just only give me a context. I will contact and ask him directly, and what I need and what we want to do. I'll honestly display about what I want to do. Mm. Yeah, that is from the beginning. Mm. So I got contact with the different party in Norwegian, the Norwegian party, Høyre, Venstre, also our vice party, Labour Party, and Green Party, and yes, so many kind of parties, and asking directly to help people also to get that case to the parliament, and showing about Myanmar is tragic, and have some kind of case in the parliament. So I'm trying for that. Yes, just some was effective. After that, I have competitions with the other case in that period. So my case was, how can I say, my case is back of the line. Mm-hmm. So all the time was happen. But we have a meeting, so many kind of meeting to discuss about how we can help them, or how we can support to the Myanmar, or how we can active against in the parliament or something like that. But that is not not actively yet. That is disappointing for me. Just trying, but not.
What was disappointing?
Disappointment about that that kind of difficult to active in Myanmar case in parliament.
So you mentioned how when you talk to people, you're very clear on this is the situation and this is what you can do. So when you came to talk to the government and the members of parliament, what was the ask?
They asked me what they can do. And we asked that first of all, we do need to recognize NUG from the beginning, right? So after that, we do need to help people who is suffering and who has really need, which area is really need the support and human that aid from the Norway. So they said to me, yes, they were trying forget or that this kind of supporting is from coming from the UD. Yeah, and then supporting is not suggestions from the parliament and government. So every quiz answer is not perfectly yet. That is not answer what we need. All the time, diplomacy is coming up front of the line, you know. So from my side, that is annoying for me. Why they don't have a real answer? Why they don't have real solution, right? And then I'm approached to the NGO network, but I think they want to, they don't want to closely working with us. They give us off-stand, they get off distant from us. However we tried, they don't give us any space for us. I have some kinds of discussions they have. I get information, but I don't get any invitation as Myanmar diaspora in Norway. So maybe they have some kinds of difficulties in their network. Maybe, I don't know, we are Myanmar diaspora's group, so they do need to careful to approach us. I don't know what is the point, but stay distant with that. But some kinds of NGO have recognized and they give me applause, or you did well, or you have going through in this journey and 5 years done, and fundraising is also good or something like that. But mainly in NGO group who is helping to the Myanmar, we can't approach yet.
Right. So there were two main things you asked of them. One was to recognize the NUG and the other was to provide humanitarian support. Is that right?
Yes. That is just two things to ask into the Norwegian government. So one is the NUG, if you have recognized to them, so they can do something different in our country with relation with the EAO or something like that. And another one is if they don't, they can't recognize the NUG, but they do need to help effectively to Myanmar. So after my observations about this system in Norway, after the 2021 to 2023, they have a lot of fund, a lot of budgets. It's helping humanitarian aid. As my recognize is right, that's 250 million Norwegian kroner from 2021, and that's up to the 2023, that is 333, so as like a $33 million at 2023.
Yeah,
they have a signing fund to the Myanmar, Myanmar humanitarian aid, but 47% of this fund supports through the UN organization. That is the big NGO in here, as like Red Cross, CARE, and WHO, or something like this organization. So I was asking about that. Is that effectively help to our people? That is the UN channel. You need to go officially through the military group.
Right.
Yeah. That's helping is going to the military control area. That is not affect to the people who are suffering in country. So that's not effective help. 47% budget. I can't say all of the 47% is go through the control area, but most of them will go through the military area. Another 42% is go to the multilateral organization, they said. But that is also true. So that's really 80% is not directly to the our civilian, our revolutionary, or our people who have suffering, right? So that is really questions with them. And then I get a report from 2024. They have reduced fund from $33 million to $28 million in 2024. They have agreement or they have discussions with NUG before that they will be changed the percent of amount going through to the civilian who really needs help. But in 2024 report, that is the more than before, that is over 87% go through the NGO who is going through with the UN and the multilateral organization, but just only 1% direct to the local.
Wow.
7% is others international organization.
Mm-hmm.
So just 1% direct to the local authority, local people who can't manage in there.
Mm.
So that is all. That is not good supporting. So that's why I would like to ask them directly. Actually, they need to support human rights and humanitarian aid to Myanmar.
Mm-hmm.
They do need to think about that strategy, that system. Is that right or wrong? Yeah.
Right. And so on your first point of requesting them to recognize NUG, that was also not successful.
Yes, if they can't do that, that's why we also really strong asking from the Ola Elvis Tour too, because if they will recognize the NUG, so that is the first country in the world, because the Norwegian is the out of the EU contract, so they can decide own decision.
Yeah, right.
Right.
But they decided not to.
Not to.
Yeah.
They have watchings to the other EU countries too.
Yeah, that's situation. Everyone's waiting for someone else to act, and things just stay the same.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the stay the same. That's why I'm not agree with. Momin said so. He is satisfied with the Norwegian government's treat to Myanmar. Nope, that is not really good enough.
You're not satisfied with the Norwegian government response?
Not, I can't say not satisfied. That's they will say that is not diplomacy.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, they have not enough for our country as like a really closely friend from the 10 years in our transition period. You know, Norway is the most important country for Myanmar. As like Telenor, they did really awful things. They sold out with 1.8 million information sold out to the military, the company.
Mm-hmm.
That information is really affect to the ground underground movement. Every people have arrested because of that. You know, that is also we ask directly to the government to stop that, but government said they don't want to involve as they are the one of the owner, biggest shareholder in Telenor. So they denied it. And then humanitarian help, they said they are helping, but that is not good way.
Mm-hmm.
They do need to consider all about that situations too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And all the time they have seduced to be go through the peace process. I want to ask them, is that the success in the past time? That peace process they failed out, right? Why they want to try again? Our peoples don't want to be peace with the military again. They want we want destroying all of this dictatorship. We do need a real new system with new governments.
So you're referring to the transition period when Norway was heavily involved in the peace talks and the peace process, and trying to bring all the parties together, including the military, and you're inferring that during this time or in a post-military future, or perhaps not a post-military future, that you're fearing or you're seeing now that Norway is continuing to make some of those same mistakes and to want to directly involve the military in discussions on the future of the country. Is that right?
As mentioned, yes, more of the directions is like that. So that is really clear message from our people. Mm-hmm. We don't need to discuss with the military without they will accept our request, mm-hmm. right? So peace process is not effective. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we can do other things if every people think that politics is will be terminated at the discussion point. Mm. Yes, we do need to discuss. But first of all, we need that requirement that we requested because of every people have enough suffering. Mm-hmm. They lose all of their life. They already lost, right? How we can fix it? Mm-hmm. So that sacrifice already done. So we do need our request first. After that, we will go to the discussion point.
And when you talk about needing those requests first, remind us of what those requests you want them to fulfill before the dialogue part.
That's a clearly message from the NUG and our EAOR contract. Mm-hmm. What we will, military will follow up. First, that group who has abused to the own people, they will go to the dome judgment. They will head in the justice.
With transitional justice.
Yeah, yeah. Transitional justice. First, they will go down. Mm-hmm. Or the whole group will downsize and go to the justice. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is first we need.
Right, so you're saying, so to clarify, you're saying that, or you're demanding that there must be transitional justice that takes place before the onset of a dialogue.
Yeah.
Mm, very interesting. And what response are you getting?
We don't have yet. They are trying now with peace conference. You will hear about that. They have happened now in Myanmar.
Mm, tell us about that.
I don't know exactly, but they have invited some kinds of parties.
Who's they?
In Myanmar, in the land.
I mean, you said they have invited. Who?
Military.
The military has, okay.
The military has invited all of the party leaders and inactive party leaders and active parties leaders. And they were trying to get a peace conference. Mm. Or have they said that they were trying to stop the civil war and trying to get peace and go through this crisis.
And is Norway involved in that?
Not, I don't know exactly yet, but I can say they were involved or not, I don't know.
Right.
That military is trying for that. Maybe ASEAN. Well, involved in there because of the Malaysians and ASEAN need some kind of discussion.
Mm. Right. Yeah. So, so your overall assessment of Norwegian foreign policy post-coup, how would you describe that?
To the audience, I would like to say that we need some more voice to ask to the Norwegian government to do effectively a help to Myanmar. Mm-hmm. Don't be only a politic and diplomatic way. And if you want really support to the human rights, mm-hmm. do the simple way to effective, to be effective.
So this is quite a journey that you've continued to be on. Has it ever crossed your mind if your father was still here, what he would think?
He was proud for me.
Yeah. How does that make you feel?
For our people, he was disappointed and he was sad.
Yeah.
for Myanmar.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you will stay fighting for democracy and human rights, and then what do he wants? For personally, he will satisfy for me whatever I can do now.
Yeah. So do you feel this kind of family thread or family connection as a thread woven into the tapestry of Myanmar's ongoing journey?
Yeah, that I think that is really changed mindset from the past to now, you know, from the beginning of the revolution. Every parents don't stop to evolve this revolution.
Mm-hmm.
They support it, right? That is the one change thing.
Mm-hmm.
So our cultures and our mindset is really living in the fear.
Mm.
But now that is really different.
Yeah.
Right? Right? They were more and more effective in the futures.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish that will be more inclusive than we have.
Wun Man Wen, thank you so much for joining us and having this extensive conversation about these very interesting topics. I really enjoyed taking the time to be able to go in these directions.
Yes, really, I'm also really appreciative of that podcast and invitation to me. And then I'm really happy to introduce about our organizations. And that's like you asked to me, just only I want to add in there, that is, we are standing here like a diaspora group in Norway. We do need to recognize from Norwegian people and Norwegian government and then Norwegian group who is acting for Myanmar. So we are here, we are doing for Myanmar people, and then we are trying to develop our community in Norway. So we do need support, and we do need to recognize for that too. Thank you.
I know for a lot of podcast listeners, as soon as the fundraising requests start up, you just kind of zone out till it's over, skip ahead. But if you're taking the time to listen to our full podcast, can I ask that you also take a moment to listen to our spiel? Because the reality is, creating this content takes immense effort and resources. And if you make a donation or contribution, you'll not just be helping to keep this podcast going, you'll also be standing in solidarity with the people of Myanmar during one of the most challenging periods in their history. Please take a look at insightmyanmar.org/donation for more details.
Oh, ba, yara nanda da, yara nanga na, yara nanga da, yara nanga boda ba, yara nanga.